12-year-old Lee Spencer is in the back seat of his family's car as it's pulling up the driveway of the house they are moving into. Lee notices a young girl looking at him from the upstairs window. No one else in the car sees her. This is the beginning of a 4-year journey of Lee Spencer's unbelievable events that happened in and outside of that house. Spencer's Ghosts, available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, any place you get your books. Available in paperback and ebook.
I'm Linda Maris, and my book is Hypocrisy versus Mysticism, Wisdom and Morality. It is about my paranormal phenomena and channeling the spirit of a provocative, influential comedian who unveils his past life journey and current spiritual state. If you are intrigued by the mysteries of life, the spirit realm, and personal growth, this book is a must-read. Step into the unseen. You are listening to Ghosts in the Valley with Al Cooley.
Back to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today, as promised, is my second part of the Spirit Guides Paranormal Team talking to Diana Krutt, Joe Pastelock, and the founder of the Spirit Guides, Donnie Parker. And I'll be right back with the rest of my conversation with the Spirit Guides Paranormal right after these brief messages.
Ghost stories are always scarier when they're told by the very people who experienced them. Hi, I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And we're the hosts of the Homespun Haints podcast.
We talk to people just like you who've come face to face with ghosts, demons, haints, and other strange paranormal phenomena. All of it makes for a chilling good time.
So grab yourself a sweet tea, turn off the lights, and listen to some eerie, true ghost stories on Homespun Haints. Wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not scared. Are you?
Yeah, I hope that they can bring some money in for this church and get this thing renovated, you know. And
we've made some headway. We just got to get the momentum back that we used to have.
And you don't want to mess up too much of the originality of it. You know what I'm saying?
No.
I've seen some places they renovate and it's nothing like what it was, you know, and then.
No, that's what I'm trying to do on both parts, is to try to keep it that way.
Mm-hmm. But I know it takes a lot of money to operate something like that, you know.
Ain't but a little bit of electricity, and as you saw, ain't nothing but two outhouses, Johnny on the spots. And that's the way it originally was. That's why the church left in the 70s. Because all they had was the windows for AC and wood-burning stoves for heat. And they had an outhouse in the back.
That'd be a cool place to have a church service, though, wouldn't it? They could, you know, open that back up for church services.
Mm-hmm. Steve Plitt has already been bringing that back. And in fact, I think they're planning, if I remember correctly, they're going to do a tent revival Sunday after we do the investigation in August. But we're trying to do an event on Saturday. We may try to do an event on Saturday, not as Spirit Guides, but as the other entity that I am, and bring in some more money. Mainly, we've been trying to do history events, but it seems like nobody cares about history anymore.
That's sad, ain't it? I think history plays a big part in all of it.
Mm-hmm. That was actually a self-sustaining little town by itself. Train station, mail. The post office, everything was there that everybody needed.
If you're standing on the front porch of that church, right, and you're looking out from the front porch, is it a highway or something that's right there you can see?
Yes, 29, and it wasn't there.
Right. Wasn't it used to be all woods right there?
Back then, probably not, because of the during the war, there wasn't many trees left.
Right.
All the resources were being used up. But yeah, it was a field. It was a farm. Mm-hmm. During the war, it was a big field, and the property was donated by the Wine family to the church. And there was something else there. We're still trying to figure out what. We know the tax records go back to 1850. There was a structure there. There's a drawing of a Civil War soldier who did a sketch. There's something there, but you can't figure out what it is. The spirits are telling us there was a house there before that burned down. Spirits are telling us the soldiers of the area came to help. We're still peeling that dead onion and digging more.
Yeah, I had a guest on before. She was a Civil War buff, you know, and she was talking about the Ouija board and how the Ouija board was mainly back late 1800s was trying to contact the families from the soldiers that died.
Well, back in the 1800s and early 1900s, I think they call it the era of spiritualism, mm-hmm. where people were, because of that, were trying, sorry, Al, I haven't gotten to your book yet. I'm reading another one about all the reports that were allowed in the newspapers back then of hauntings and stuff like that. So,
right. You know, I'm saying, like, if these people that died, I mean, just other than soldiers, I mean, there's a lot of people died during the Civil War, mainly the Confederate, you know, soldiers that they just let them rot on the field. Mm-hmm. These people never had a proper closure with these deaths. So the Ouija board was mainly, you know, you're talking about spiritualism, getting in contact with these for that final goodbye. You know what I'm saying? So she had we had a long, long conversation on that. And a lot of it was from the Virginia and the battlefields and the people that were just left there dying, or their thought was to go back and give them proper burial, but they never did, you know? So, and I got kind of moved that day. We were the one speaker that was talking outside the church. I can't remember his name. He's giving a little bit of history of the area.
Oh, Richard. He's another member of my team that decided he was going to retire himself. But I keep kicking him in the butt to get him to own.
I loved it, man. I was moved by his speech.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the history. I got to tell my wife, you know, I've learned more going to Gettysburg and Williamsburg on just being there and hearing these people's stories than I did from our history books. You know, because you actually see the remnants of, like you're saying, those bodies of not the, they don't have proper burials or headstones. Now,
Richard would tell you that what they would do is they would get the prisoners out of the jails, especially for Union soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just sit them in a ditch row, throw some rocks and some twigs on them and just let the feral animals have at them.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
And there's actually a spot in Culpeper in the old military cemetery where they took the fragments that were left when the Union came back and gathered them up and put them all there. So they did somewhat get a proper burial. But yeah, they were just tossed in a ditch, covered up with rocks and stuff, and just let them rot. Let them get eat up.
Yeah, I think when I was in Gettysburg, you know, they're talking about when the, say, New Jersey or something, they're coming over the battle line, you know, and they're coming, and you're sitting ducks down in the field, and these people sitting up over on the rocks behind boulders are picking you off. And usually the first person they're going to pick off is that person coming in with a bugle or a flag of that state.
Yep.
And if you drop that flag, I can still remember this, if you drop that flag, the person behind you is supposed to pick that flag up.
Yep.
If you walk over that flag and you don't pick it up, you're shot from behind from your own people.
The way it was all along in all the battles here. If there was a flag, then even going back to Revolutionary War, if it hit the ground, you somebody behind you pick it up and carry it on. You were a sitting target no matter what. Play drums, you best be in the back. Don't lead them.
There's been a few even here going on in Ohio for years, between Ohio and Kentucky, and it had to do with a boulder. I don't know if you knew about that, Diana. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's on the river, Ohio River, from Cincinnati, And there's a boulder that was in the river.
Yep.
And each state's trying to claim that boulder. And they were fighting over this boulder. I mean, sitting in the National Guards from each state because the one state took the boulder and was going to try to house it in a parking garage or something. And they had to put the boulder back. I don't know the whole story. You probably heard that. Well, you don't hear about these stories about these states fighting amongst themselves. And this is not that long ago.
Mm-mm.
Crazy.
Yep.
But you know, spiritualism and Christianity, and they separated that with these board games, mainly on spiritualism.
Mm-hmm.
Turned more into being a demonic type of game, but it wasn't set up that way, you know.
It's not the fact that it became a demonic game, is people didn't know what they were dealing with.
Right.
They're not to close it.
I mean, if you're going to open a door and try to talk to something, right, you don't know what you opened it. And if you're going to open it, you better know how to close it. And some people, they'll get in it and all of a sudden it scares them and they run away and they left the door open.
They left it open, yep.
Same thing on the seances. If you don't close out that seance, you're going to have a problem.
Exactly. I've been to table tippings. It's off the hook. I was checking to make sure there was no knees touching. And and I felt the table move because I was sitting there. I was answering questions. But I was checking to make sure nobody's knees were touching anything. It was legit. It freaked me out, but it was a good experience.
I had a priest tell me a while back, if you're going to get a Ouija board, buy it new, and close out the sessions. Because if you buy it at a garage sale or a flea market, you don't know.
Oh, you don't know what you're going to get.
You don't know what you're getting.
Yep.
Or how many times it has not been closed out.
That's been a couple of the investigations that we've been called on, at least one or two, and they were playing with the Ouija board, and then you close the door.
Yeah.
They lost the Ouija board, so we couldn't help them close the door.
I mean, the problem is that they commercialized the Ouija board, right?
Uh-huh.
People thought it was a game, and a lot of people don't realize what it actually can do. I tell my grandkids, they talk about it because they know what I do. And I said, no, you will never use a Ouija board in this house. And I said, don't ever do it. Don't even try to. Because you have to know what you're doing. I would use one with my team because I know Donnie has used them before. I know Denny's used them before. They know what they're doing. If you know what you're doing, that's fine. But like you said, people make mistakes too.
Well, really, the Ouija board they become like a demonic evil thing until The Exorcist came out. That's my opinion anyway. They really made it being demonic.
Yes. It's not meant to be, but.
And I have witnessed, where, like you said, Joe, where maybe you shouldn't have one, that's my opinion. But I've had one as a kid. I think we probably all did. We all messed around with them at one time or another.
That's how I learned about them.
I still got one one from 1960 sitting in my closet here, but don't use it.
I'm not sure who ended up with the one that my sister and I had.
Yeah, I know it's here in the house, but we just don't.
Now, I see on your Spirit Guides Paranormal, your emblem, I'm thinking that you have a lot of respect for the Native American culture.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I'm thinking, I had a conversation with an Indian years ago when I was a child. I loved his philosophy, man. I'm just a kid. But even to this day, it rings true. You're talking about spiritualism. Everything had a spirit. Every living thing has a spirit.
Everything made by Creator. We believe everything that is made by Creator has a spirit and an energy.
Yeah, plants and everything. Yeah. So his thing was, like I think I told you before, when I do my coffee, I always bring the spoon up and I let the coffee drip back down in the mug. That's why he did it, And I was 8 years old watching this old man on the front porch of this Indian reservation just pouring his hot coffee back into a still little mug. And I said, "What are you doing, man?" He said, "I'm getting evil spirits out of this." Now, I don't know if he was joking with me, but to this day, I got this habit of doing that to my coffee. I was pour dripping that back down in my cup with a spoon. I love Reiki. I love the spiritualism from that. My sister's a ordained preacher, And I was surprised that she's the one turned me on to it, because she's a Methodist preacher. You know, I'm thinking, I'm Catholic, she's Methodist, and we're at this Reiki session. And but she was cool about it. You know, she says, you know, it's just getting back to basics, you know, on life. I just loved it. I felt I had two bad knees, and I left there. I said it might be just in my head or whatever, but my knees didn't hurt when I left there. And she, I love this lady too. It's called the White Barn Healing Tent. It's in Ravenna, Ohio. She does Reiki sessions in her tent. It's on her farm. She takes in animals that are going to be put down, so she lets them spend their last days of their life at her farm. Yeah, the White Barn Healing Tent. I can't say enough about her. And you know, and she also was talking about, you know, that about history, you know, the history and of the land, which gets me to the point with my house I grew up in. Now, is it so much the house being haunted, or is it the land?
The land.
It's probably the land. Yes. I just listened to an audiobook not too long ago. I listened to weird audiobooks, hauntings and stuff. And one of the stories they were talking about is, they went to a haunted house, and they were asking, is it the land that's haunted, or is it the house? And the one guy says, well, it can't be the land. The land's never haunted. They're tied to the house. And I sat there, and I'm sitting in the car, and I'm sort of laughing at it, because I'm saying, you have that backwards, buddy. Whoever wrote this book has it backwards. It's usually the land that's on it, and sometimes it's tied to the house, but more so often I find things tied to the land.
The reason I say that, because I wrote that book, right? The house burnt down in 2005. I can go by that house today and get that same freaking feeling. My brother-in-law was with me not long ago, and I was telling him about the house, and he wanted to get out of there as quick as he could. He had the same feeling I had. So I want to take a spirit medium just to see what she or he thinks or they can get from that area.
All right, guys, we're kidnapping Denny. We're throwing him in a sack. We're heading north.
There you go. I think I'm sort of like you. The reason I say a lot of things about the land is my cousin lived in a haunted house. And the house that he built the house on this property, the person that owned the property before had a two-story house with an attic. He built a ranch. They were basically a bi-level, no attic. The person that lived there on the property before hung himself in the attic. And they found him there. You could be standing in his living room, and you will hear the chair, and you will hear the snap of the rope going against the beams up in the attic.
Mm-hmm.
And the spirit was tied to what was there before. It wasn't. And he got mean towards CN. He was actually a physical spirit too. He had some meanness to him. I grew up Catholic. Most of my family's Catholic. I grew up an Italian family, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, my wife's Italian, so yeah. You know, when you're converting over from Baptist or Methodist to Catholic, you know, and yeah, you got to have that thing called purgatory.
Yeah.
So when you die, you know, and you know, as you know, Donnie, you know, growing up little, you're taught when you die, you either go to heaven or you go to hell. And there's no in between. There's no judging. I mean, God knows when you die where you're going. So, and if you talk about a spirit or anything in church, or you're going to go to hell. Yeah, you didn't talk about spirits or ghosts or anything in church ever when I was a kid. So it was new to me when we were talking about purgatory at the Catholic Church. You know, how long does purgatory last? How long do you need to be judged? You know,
well,
I'm not per se religious, though I grew up Southern Baptist, baptized Pentecostal, traveled the Red Road, and then learning Reiki and all. I'm not sure about purgatory. I think purgatory is what we call a spirit that's attached to a property. They're afraid to move on. And I've run across this with a few preacher spirits. They're afraid to move on because of what they've done.
Right.
And there's fear of going one way or the other. But energy cannot be killed. Energy exists and stays and remains. It can only change a level of vibration.
spirits is all energy.
Correct.
I have my, like I think I told you before, my first guest on my show, he kind of took me back because I was new at this as far as like, I'm always thought you go to heaven, you go to hell. And so I'll tell you what, within the past 7 years of doing this show, even my views have changed as far as, like you're talking about, you know, diehard Catholic or Christian, or I'm more of a spiritualist. I mean, there has to be a God, it has to be, but is it the God we're taught in the Bible? Because, you know, you keep thinking the Bible's written by all men. And if you don't go back to the Middle East and see how they treat the women, I mean, it had to be worse even back then. So it's I'm not saying I'm anti-Bible. I think the Indians had it right a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
on the way their values were and honoring the dead and honoring the living, you know. But, you know, my first guest was an atheist. You know, and so his thinking was, when I asked him a simple question, like, do you believe you can move a spirit on? He said, what do you move it on to? Because if I don't believe in heaven or hell, what are you moving the spirit on to? So my thought process is, you're killing that spirit. If you're trying to get rid of that spirit, you're basically trying to kill that spirit, which you can't do. No. So the spirit's going to stay either on this earth.
Right.
And I couldn't grasp that, you know, but I'm grasping that now, because I didn't mean to put him off like I thought he was not right, but, you know, because you're raised a certain way, you're taught a certain way.
The interesting thing about what I like about our team is we all come from different beliefs. We all have different beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
What Don has said, we're all spiritual. So even at Fleetwood, they usually call upon me because I'm the Catholic. Thanks, guys. You know, I'll say a prayer.
We call on you for your ghost bait.
Do you like to do like a protection prayer before you do an investigation and one before you leave?
We tend to, depending on where we're at, yes, or what's going on or how we did. I like to, if nothing else, I'll say one for myself. But then we'll have Donnie will say something as well to add into it, to add the whole roundness of everything that we're doing. And it sort of works out nice that way.
So your team kind of balances each other out.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
There's six of you. So what did the other? I know Denny. Who's the other two?
My son, Joe.
Joe. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Amber.
And Amber. What does Amber do? She like a psychic medium or?
No, she's a sensitive. She's a sensitive like me.
Like each one of you have like a different job, like, you know, either a spirit box or dowsing rods or EVP.
Oh, no. We all do everything.
D's our best on Estes. She kicks butt on Estes message. That did.
Denny does really well too, but Denny gets bombarded.
Denny's our medium.
I heard that at Fleetwood Church that day that he was kind of targeted for on everybody.
Well, they know him. He was targeted from the day one when he walked in the church.
Right? Didn't the one spirit even say that he's a father of her baby or something?
Yeah,
I thought that was the first time I heard that.
Yes, her husband.
Actually, Denny's got a bunch of babies out there from previous lives.
Ones he didn't know about, right?
I mean, some of them are in Williamsburg.
You gotta be paying alimony for a spirit, yeah.
He's got so many girlfriends out there, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always
teach you. I got eight kids. I died 20 years ago. You owe me some child support here, buddy. Yeah.
Thank God he didn't have that back then where his kids were at.
Glad you mentioned Denny's session down at the Paracon, because I have that on. I couldn't get it on camera. My camera died. We were having some technical difficulties, me and Joe, with our equipment. My cameras are dying real quick. But I have it on EVP, his whole session.
Was it the Paracon, or was it when we did that private investigation where I kind of let it know, and I'm like, Denny, this sounds like your son. Private conversation between him and I prior to this thing showing up. Yeah. Or this entity showing up. I'm like, Denny.
Like you're saying that, you know, spirits run off of energy, right?
Yeah.
So would it be safe for somebody who has a pacemaker to go into an investigation? Because it could shut down the battery of that pacemaker, mm-hmm. right?
I would now you're really getting deep, brother.
In theory,
I would rather know what's in there before I put a person like that in that position.
Yeah.
We have had batteries drained, like, and we just charged them and we're in there. And then we've got battery packs and rechargers and everything else, because some places we go, there is no electricity. So we carry the little technical stuff. Joe will tell you what it is. And we carry them, and they'll drain them.
The reason I asked that question, because it was brought to my attention a couple nights ago. A person wants to go for investigation. So what do you think? Because I had a pacemaker put in. But that was the first time that was ever brought to my attention, because I know for myself, when I had all my equipment with all my battery packs, I had the big battery packs, so, you know. Mm-hmm. And like you said, your stuff can be drained in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
That's the first time ever. It's always been, in my case, the batteries are drained.
Yeah.
I have been on investigations. And, Joe, you may know, too. Sometimes it looks like they're going to drain, and it'll shut itself off. When you pick it back up, it's still fully charged.
Yeah.
So, but I'd rather not put somebody with a pacemaker in that position unless they're well protected and we know what the hell we're stepping into.
Well, to give you an example, just from the Paracon with my Flux that you guys had outside, somehow that thing was fully charged. You guys got a couple hits and it went white, which means
it's dead.
Something happened. It took a hit that it made it do something that it would normally never do.
And that was in the cemetery.
Yeah.
If spirits run off of energy, or is energy, and you said you go into places where there is no energy, there is no electric, where are they getting? Are they getting their energy from the ground?
Up in the ground, from the air.
Because I'll say my grandfather, when he did the dowsing rods, and he got his water that way. And I watched it work. I mean, you can find water, gas, electric, anything underground. Yeah. So it basically would work with a spirit, right? I mean, it would be because the energy is underground.
Well, yeah, and it could be in the. We had a chat on this on our page. It could be in the rock too, in the type of stones or rocks that you're using. They could store energy.
That's in buildings, yeah.
Yeah, and a neat thing that I read an article about Stonehenge not too long ago. That wasn't an article. I'm sorry. It's not. TV show on Stonehenge. One of the experiments they actually did there was on sound and the energy that's in the Stonehenge rocks, and they would hit the they were tapping the rocks very lightly, and as they tapped them going around the circle, it made more and more sound, more and more sound waves come out of those rocks, and it was very basically building up the energy that was in there, releasing it when they hit it. It was very interesting to read. So stones, the earth, that could all build that energy up to fuel these spirits.
Yeah. Take them back again by that question, you know, about the pacemaker, because I don't have one. I don't know. Like you said, Donnie, I don't know if you put the person in that position, but my thought process was, if it's going to take out the battery of your camera, it could take out the battery. I don't know if they'd want to kill a person. I've never seen it happen yet.
That's why I would say, find out what in the hell's going on before you put him there, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, another question was, do you sell your products on, like, merch?
Yes, we have one on merch because people were asking for strange sizes that I didn't have at the time of Paracon and other events. So you can get it there.
If I can't make it down to Virginia, then I'll have you guys back on again.
Well, if you get down here for June, it's on me.
I would love to come back. I love that place, man. I'll tell you what.
But if you want to investigate with us in June, it's on me, or pick August, it's on me.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I just got one personal question.
Mm-hmm.
What's the oldest guitar you got back there?
You're not going to believe that. I mean, you probably can't see it. It's the dark brown one in the back, almost to the back. That's a 1938 Gibson.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No.
Wow.
And the reason why I got that guitar,
Jill and I are going to come for it.
the house my wife and I bought off my uncle. The house was built in 1928. So we moved in, how, you know, you're fixing things up and you're making it your house, you know. And I went up into the attic and I come across that guitar, you know. So I called my uncle. My uncle's 70, well, he's gone now, but my uncle was 72 years old at the time. Oh, excuse me, 82 years old. So I asked my uncle, I says, where did that, is that your guitar? You found that guitar? That's my dad's guitar. So that goes back, you know, and a Gibson logo on it. It's not written like the new Gibson.
Right.
Back in the 30s, during the Depression, they had to do a different design.
Yeah.
And I've had it, I had the bridge on it fixed and repaired. And for some reason, every time I put strings on and I go to tighten the strings up, it brings the bridge back up off the.
Oh, well.
It takes the wood with it. I thought, you know, from now on, I was told just to go ahead and let it be an antique item. You know.
What gauge string are you using?
I use 9 gauge.
I might have to bring it down a little bit.
Might have to. Yeah.
It shouldn't draw the neck, but it is old. So.
Yeah.
Chance it. Yeah. My favorite guitar of all time. You know, some people say they like the Gibson, they like Fender, but my best guitar I ever had. And the only reason I got rid of it because playing in a band, you know, it was a cheap guitar. It was a Harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that guitar to death. It was so, and you know, if you're a guitar player, you know what fits your hand the best.
Right.
And I love that guitar to death. And I want, but I got ribbed every time I play in a gig or whatever. Oh, there comes Cooley with this Kmart special or whatever. You know, it's like I got rid of it just from peer pressure. And I wish I had that guitar back.
I wish we had my Marshall Les Paul.
I have a Les Paul back there too. It's you probably can't see it, but it's right past the pole here. It's a like a camel color. It's a 1990s special edition for colors. And I was playing in Cleveland, a gig in Cleveland, Ohio, and this kid walks up and says, "Can I take your guitar out and show it to my buddy in a parking lot?" I said, "Hell no, no."
Yeah. Ain't going to the parking lot. I can tell you that right now.
But I bought that guitar in Cincinnati online because the guy was trying to get rid of it. He wanted to meet me in some type of cornfield in Cincinnati. I said, "I'm not doing that. I got to meet you in a public place, you know." So he said, "Well, you're going to have to come to my house. I live in a gated community here." He's the athletic trainer for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, jeez.
So it's like a $2 million match, you know. So I go in there, he has like a triple my area in size in his basement, and it's all these guitars are autographed by B.B. King or Eric Clapton and Chet Atkins, every guitar means something to him, except that one, because it wasn't autographed by nobody. So I bought that one off of him, and he says, "Oh, I want to show you something, man." It's like, it's a protege from Gibson. It's called the Spider-Man Les Paul, you know, for the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
So the web is is not painted in the wood. It's above it, you know,
etched on it,
like you could feel the spider web.
Yeah.
And they made a protege of like 10 of those, and autographed by Les Paul. And I said, "How much you want for it?" He said, "Well, right now, if you want to buy it right now because you're buying the other one, I'll let you have it for a couple thousand." And I'm like, "Oh my God, my wife's going to kill me. Get home. I already spent this much money." And I said, "No, I'm going home. I'm contacting my buddy who's a guitar freak. You know, he's 10 times worse than me." And I says, "Pete," I says, "what do you think about it?" He's, "Oh my God, I'll send you the money right now. I want it." So I turned my truck around. I went back to his house. I said, "I'll take that guitar." He said, "Oh, I just sold it. I sold it for $10,000.
Wow.
I could have got it for $2,000. I'm still burning over that because he had three of them.
Mm. And
he sold all three online after I left. Because he was waiting for me to take one of if I wanted one. And I turned it down. And so, hang. You know. Okay. You never know, you know.
Yeah, that's right. You never know. Well, good. I learned to play on a J.C. Penney guitar. I'm not that good. But my parents bought me this J.C. Penney's guitar, and I played that thing for like probably 5 years before I bought my first guitar. But I sat in my room and I learned to play guitar myself. Then I went for lessons and then I learned. Anyway, thanks, Al, for having us.
It was at this point that my audio kicked out. My recording kicked out on the interview. So many strange occurrences happened while I was doing this interview with the Spirit Guides Paranormal Team. There was strange voices happening during the recording. Some I could capture, some I could not. It was cutting in and out on Donnie Parker's track especially. But I've had this, stranger things happen on the show. But yeah, thank you, Spirit Guides Paranormal. I'm sure I'll talk with you guys again. I'm going to try to make it down in Virginia. I don't know if I'm going to make it this year with so many things going on. I've been invited to 3 or 4 different paracons to attend book signings, and just a really busy summer coming up. And really can't complain, right? Thank you, Diana Krutt, Joe Pastorlock, and Donnie Parker. You guys are fantastic. And to the rest of the team, too, that couldn't make it tonight for the Spirit Guides Paranormal. Thank you all for tuning in. And I have some really cool things coming up the next few months. I'm going to announce some of those in the next couple episodes. And again, yeah, thank you very much for stopping by. Check out the links in the show notes, where you can go contact the Spirit Guides Paranormal, where you can pick up my book, Spencer's Ghost. And I wouldn't be doing this without the tremendous support I've had from every one of you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm your host, Al Cooley, Ghost in the Valley Podcast.